page 44, called Soviet's non-enlightened state, the deluded mind produces three aspects which are bound to non-enlightenment and are inseparable from it. First is the activity of ignorance, the agitation of mind because of its non-enlightened state is called activity. When enlightened, it is unagitated. When it is agitated, anxiety follows. For the result is not independent of the cause. Second is the perceiving subject. Because of the agitation, that breaks the original unity with suchness, there appears the perceiving subject. When agitated, the mind is free from perceiving. Third is the world of objects. Because of the perceiving subject, the world of objects erroneously appears. Apart from the perceiving, there will be no world of objects. Conditioned by the world of objects, the deluded mind produces six aspects. First one is the aspect of the discriminating intellect. Depending on the erroneously conceived world of objects, the mind develops the discrimination between liking and disliking. Second is the aspect of continuity. By virtue of the intellect, the mind produces unawareness of pleasure and pain in the world of objects. The mind developing deluded thoughts and being bound to them will continue uninterrupted. Third is the aspect of attachment. Because of the continuity of deluded thoughts, the mind superimposing its deluded thoughts on the world of objects and holding fast to the discriminations of liking and disliking develops attachments to what it likes. Fourth is the aspect of the speculation on names and letters. On the basis of erroneous attachments, the deluded mind analyzes the words which are provisional. Fifth is the aspect of giving rise to evil karma, relying on names and letters. Concept which have no validity, the deluded mind investigates names and words and becomes attached to them and creates manifold types of evil karma. Sixth is the aspect of anxiety attached to the effect of evil karma. Because of the law of karma, the deluded mind suffers the effects and will not be free. It should be understood that ignorance is able to produce all types of defiled states. All defiled states are aspects of non-enlightenment. Non-enlightenment, speaking, is classified into two. One is primary unenlightenment. Second is ensuing unenlightenment. primary of the enlightenment is very subtle, very subtle and very delicate, very subtle consciousness, which corresponds to Arya Vijnana. And on the other hand, ensuing an enlightenment corresponds, discriminating consciousness. Briefly speaking, usual consciousness. Okay. And the last variety, let's review what we learned last Friday. Last Friday, page 43, it explained what the primary enlightenment is like. This is the point which we learned last Friday. So, primary enlightenment, or we can say primary ignorance, because enlightenment is the nothing but the activity of consciousness or cognitive activities. So cognitive activity or the activity of consciousness is only something defiled. So this is ignorance already. So the mind starting in an unenlightened condition is blind or ignorant, in contrast with the true nature of mind. There are two points from the page 43. One point is the ignorance, enlightenment doesn't have its own substance. This is one point. We don't know from where ignorance comes. In words, we cannot. It is impossible for us to trace back to the origin of ignorance, in terms of time process. It's impossible because it doesn't have the substantiality of its own. That's one point. Second point, and yet, the ignorance is always based on or depend on enlightenment. So root of ignorance is enlightenment. Enlightenment and the ignorance are
related very closely. But ignorance itself doesn't have its own substance. That is the point. So the, in other words, the ignorance already the exist, but we don't know where it is. But when the time is right, conditions arranged, ignorance appears because it doesn't have its own substance. It exists from all eternity. This is a characteristic of ignorance. And also it means that it has no validity to be substantiated. But it is not independent of the original enlightenment. But in this book says that if we are free from original enlightenment, we can be free from the unenlightenment. This book takes example of the directions. If we have idea of direction, then very naturally you have some problem. If you make a mistake, if you walk toward east, which is not right course, that time you have some problem with that direction, because we have already idea of direction. So, if you are free from directions, wherever you walk, no problem. So, same applies to relation between enlightenment or unenlightenment. If you're free from enlightenment, very naturally, you're free from unenlightenment. For instance, in Shobo Genzo, right from death, Dogen Bento mentions the message of Kassan and Jodan Zen masters. Says since there is a Buddha within life and death, there is no life and death. That means the life and death is always depending on, anyway, the Buddha, so-called enlightenment. But life and at that time, it says there is no life and death, because the enlightenment or Buddha nature always there, and within the domain of Buddha nature, life and death operates constantly. But if we say so, we attach to idea of Buddha nature, which makes us a problem. We can get into the problem because we are attached to the idea of enlightenment or Buddha nature. Saying, well, if the life and death always depends on Buddha nature or enlightenment, why is it we have to drop this up? Because we are already Buddha nature. So, we completely misunderstand life and death. In other words, we take a Buddha, in life and death, for Buddha nature. So we mixed up. That is a problem. That's why we have to do something for that, because we misunderstand. So that's why next the Dogen Zenji mentions, since there is no Buddha within life and death, one is not deluded by life and death. Because if you are free from idea of Buddha nature, I think life and death becomes life and death as it is. So you can deal with life and death as it is. So no problem. In other words, when you graduate from university and get in PhD, and if you complete free from PhD, well, no problem, because you can join a member of society and help people as usual. But if you attach to the title, so-called PhD, you are really caught by the PhDs. So, well, if you get, but actually there is a PhD and master degrees and bachelor degrees and high school and grad schools, there are the differentiations. So we have to go step by step. But on the other hand, if you attach to this degree, well, it's pretty difficult to join the human society and help the people completely as usual. They're forgetting the title, you know, without arrogance. So very naturally, you have to be free from that title. That's why he says, well, the reason is delusion, ignorance doesn't have its own substance. So life and death, practically speaking, doesn't have its own substance. So if you don't touch it, it doesn't appear. Okay? But if you attach to it, it appears. When the time is right, conditions are ends, it appears. So, life and death is the, just like a nucleus of its life. But on the other hand, it depends on, anyway, enlightenment. Very closely. That's why life and death or ignorance are not always something wrong. So if you realize very deeply, it's completely turned over, completely different way. And then Buddha nature appears. But Buddha nature or the life and death are also a cause of trouble for us, because we are pretty easily caught by. So we have to be free from enlightenment or unenlightenment. This is a freedom. That's why Dogen Zenji mentions in the beginning of chapter of life and death. You know, since there is a Buddha within life and death, there is no life and death. So since there is no Buddha within life and death, three, one is not deluded by life and death. Okay. So today, the ensuing unenlightenment or what would you say subsequent and ensuing in the enlightenment is the fruits of the activity of primary enlightenment. Ensuing enlightenment indicates explanation of how primary enlightenment operates. The structure of giving rise to the deluded thoughts. In other words, the structure, the ensuing enlightenment is indication of how to operate the primary enlightenment. In other words, how does Arevijñāna operate in a complete way in our everyday life? So, the first, there are three aspects which are bound to enlightenment. One is activity of ignorance, second, the preceding subject, third, the world of object. This is the structure of Arevijñāna. So we call the three aspects which are bound to. So this is nothing but the explanation of the theoretical structure of the enlightenment, so the Arevijñāna, or the explanation of how the mind issues forth from ignorance in time process. From time process means from moment to moment. Okay. Or this is indication of the structure of Arevijñāna I mentioned before.
Okay. You're saying that ensuing enlightenment, the pattern of ensuing enlightenment explains the pattern of primary enlightenment?
Yeah. Okay. Primary enlightenment is corresponds to the Arevijñāna. Arevijñāna, ensuing enlightenment corresponds the discriminating consciousness, or using idea of consciousnesses. Is that right? That's primary enlightenment. Primary enlightenment is Arevijñāna, the very basic. According to Buddhist psychology, that is eighth consciousness. We have eight consciousnesses in Buddhist psychology. Five sense consciousness, five consciousnesses, and also the sixth consciousness, and seventh consciousness, and eighth consciousness. Eighth consciousness is subconsciousness. Subconsciousness. We call Arevijñāna. In this book, the two technical terms are Tathāgatagarbha, that means the human consciousness is seen in terms of the truth. And that time consciousness is quite different from our understanding, because human consciousness is not bad, because inside of the consciousness there is Buddha nature. So we call Tathagata Garbha. Garbha means the womb, embryo. So, Buddha nature, the embryo is already, you know, at the embryo of the, you know, and we have already embryo of the Buddha. That is human consciousness in terms of the truth. So that is a real state of human consciousness, but we don't know what the Garbha is. But we want to know what the Garbha is, that's why we have to see human consciousness in a concrete way. So the Garbha, when the Tathagata Garbha is seen in terms of human consciousness, in terms of the level of human consciousness, analyzing, synthesizing what it is, and that time human consciousness is called Arevijñāna in this part. So Arevijñāna is structure of how Tathagata Garbha operates in the concrete aspect of human society, human life. Understanding. In that time, Tathagata human consciousness is called Arevijñāna. Right. So this is the Arevijñāna is idea of human consciousness in terms of time process. But in terms of spatial dimension, human consciousness is called Tathagata Garbha. You understand? So a little different concept here. So now we are, anyway, I'm just studying the Arevijñāna. So let's see, number one, the page 44, first is activity of benevolence, the agitation of mind because of its non-enlightened state is called activity. When enlightened, it is unagitated. When it is agitated, anxiety, dukkha, which we say suffering, anxiety or ill, follows. For the result is not independent of the cause. So the activity of ignorance, three aspects of which are bound to non-enlightenment, and also six aspects of the deluded thoughts. Those are called the ensuing enlightenment, right? So first, anyway, the activity of ignorance. Ignorance means in this case that which it agitates, in other words, it vibrates. In that term it is called ignorance. When the mind is vibrate, mind means when Arevijñāna is agitated or vibrated, it is called ignorance. But this book doesn't explain so in detail how, why the Arevijñāna, as a basic consciousness, start to move. That's in the experience of mind. But on the other hand, in the merely consciousness, the Buddhist psychology, Vijñānabhāra, or the Yogacara Buddhism explain in detail about that. But in this book, does not say in detail. But there is a question. How? Because there is a the contradictions, because our vijñāna as a basic, you know, it is an absolute or truth. So why? How? Absolute move. Why absolute give rise to movement or hesitation? By what? Many questions come up. But anyway, according to this book, also mentions, anyway, the ignorance means the time when the other vijñāna is vibrated or agitated. That time it is ignorance. So other vijñāna, very deep, in a deep sense, other vijñāna is almost moving, but it doesn't appear on the surface of human consciousness, usual human consciousness. Well, we have to explain this one, but I don't want to bother. Maybe next time we can say a particular technical term according to Buddhist psychology. We say parinama in Sanskrit. That means transformation. How our vijñāna transform into human society, human consciousness, usual human consciousness. Our vijñāna is very basic, yeah, the consciousness. What is the truth, and also what is very closely related with human consciousness. Okay. So how it turns into human consciousness. By what? Who create agitation or vibration of our vijñāna? This is always many questions. In other words, you know, who creates human beings? Who create all sentient beings? This is always interesting question. That's why religion always researching that. Anyway, this is an interesting point. But basically, simply speaking, you can think our vijñāna, very deep, in a deep sense, is moving constantly, but it is not ripe exactly enough to appear on the surface. So, but on basis of it, it's moving. But it's, that movement is very still quiet. But when the time is right, conditions arranged, it appears. It appears as consciousness. So, who did it? That is so-called ignorance, we say. Ignorance is conditions. Conditions, we say, conditions. Because when something is there, it should have its own cause. Because something which has appeared is cause, not a result. That's why it must have its own cause. So very naturally we want to know what it is. Who did it? But anyway, this is the first activity of ignorance. Right? So the In this case, the agitation or violation of consciousness is dichotomy of the consciousness, dichotomy of consciousness. Okay. So that's why it is called, agitation of the mind is called illness, or vibration, or so from this point, the activity of ignorance is the cause, and the activity of, no, excuse me, the existence of suffering is effect. So very natural, when the mind is violated, there is a cause which is good enough to bring up, anyway, human suffering. As a fact. So when enlightened, it is unagitated. So if you search very deeply the ignorance, origin of the ignorance, it's mind is, you can see the mind, the state of the mind, which is not agitated. Basically speaking, strictly speaking, mind and the depth of the mind is moving, but it's very still because at super speed it's moving. But when it appears, that movement, which is very still, moving at the super speed, creating something. We don't know what it is because it's moving at the super speed. And that is what makes it possible to create. That is the cause of creation is conditions. We call conditions, many conditions. And then when it creates something, it is called human society, human world. Okay? Then trees, birds, many beings exist. At that time, it is already ignorant world, the deluded world. So, but ignorant world, it doesn't have its own substance. That's why when you realize it very deeply, you can see the stable condition of human consciousness. You can see the depth of consciousness. That is called, I say, silence or absolute existence. So, the activity of ignorance is, process of these three aspect which are bound to non-enlightenment are the process of how Ala Vijnana works. Okay? Process. So first of all, we have a kind of actions always. Before you are conscious of, anyway, there is some movement always. And on the basis of your life and movement, connected with the circumstances or world, its movement, regardless of whether you are conscious of it or you like or dislike, anyway, there is a movement. So that is, that movement is going by airport? Maybe so, but something more than by airport. He's already gone. So that is activity of ignorance. Many conditions there. Coming from the past, beginningless of past, you know, when the time is like conditions arranged, that you can see the movement, activity of your life. So that is activity of ignorance, okay? And then you can create the world of subject, what you can perceive. This is the first stage of subject. The first one, the activity of ignorance is the first stage of agitated mind. Agitated, unoriginal, very first stage, very first. You don't know what it is, but it's moving. That is called the activity of ignorance. So your basic nature of human life is nothing but movement of existence. Movement. And then you can create subject. Subject what you can perceive. That subject is also not idea of subject. You can understand in common sense, but because it is very first stage of perceiving subject. In other words, first moment when you are born in your mother's womb. That moment, first moment, something like this. So that is a subject, we say here, it says, perceiving subject. So, perceiving subject because of the agitation. You can see the subject. Subject comes into existence, which you can perceive. So, there appears the perceiving subject. When agitated, the mind is free from perceiving. When unagitated, so, when unagitated means the very first stage, of the giving rise to the subject, perceiving subject. So it is the idea of subject before you are conscious of it. This is the first stage of subject. That's why when I'm agitated, when the mind is agitated, there is very naturally idea of subject you can grasp. But before, there is subject. But it is nothing but image of subject through inference. But inference is also related very closely with present. So inference is important for us. Through the inference we can see something. But is that something through the inference is related very closely with present life. So that's why it is important too. So that is the perceiving subject. Third is the world of objects. So next, you can see if you have a subject, very naturally the object comes into existence. Automatically. So because of the preceding subject, the word of object erroneously appears, because the when object comes into existence, that means agitation, movement, or activity of subject. That is called object. Right? Object, when object appears, that means already mind is agitated, moved. So, in other words, the existence of your eyes as a subject. But when your eyes doesn't operate, you cannot say existence of eyes as a subject. So only when eyes function, at that time you can accept existence eyes as a subject. Without function, you cannot recognize. You cannot recognize subject. So function of the eye and the subject of the eye cross related, very closely interconnected. So very naturally, when the eyes function, very naturally, eyes as a subject exist and inject its own object. So automatic. The subject, the object, and function connected. And by interpenetration, interconnections of three, function and subject and the object. And then you can have an idea, which is called subject or object. And then idea of function. So each of them doesn't exist separately. So each of them doesn't have its own substance. Right? But each of them exists exactly by interdependent co-origination among three of them, subject, object, functions. Just like a school, teacher, and student. Sangha, and teacher, and student, you can say. But each of them doesn't have its own substance. When we say here is a student, means what seems to be separate from others, but I don't think, because each of you doesn't have his own substance. So you can go anywhere. So even though you go out of the Sangha, people don't call you, you are a member of the Sangha. No. You become very usual human beings. But if people call you, you are a member of society only when you are connected with the Sangha teacher. Then you are called student of the Sangha. But next moment it disappears. So this so the world of object appears very naturally, automatically. Okay? But this object is also the first stage of giving rise to object. That's why he says, because of the preceding subject, the world of object erroneously appears, because it's already subject moves already. That means subject exists in a dualistic sense, dualistic world. It's already moved. So apart from the perceiving, there will be no world of objects. So if subject doesn't work, no object. So only subject works, object comes up. So it means while you can see the object, that means you can you think you are a rock. When you sit down and you cannot see anything, that time your life doesn't make sense. So when you do that, then you then become one and nothing to see as the object. It doesn't make sense. So while you can see the object at that time, something observing. That is constantly watching. So that is called object and subject. But when you become one with Zazen, then no object or subject. If there is no object, very naturally no subject. So that is a smile. But it's working, but it's very basic nature. Very basic nature of activities. So you don't, you can't see it. That is called oneness, samadhi, exactly. But when your mind moves or vibrates, even slightly, then you can see that and you. Very much. That is dichotomy of subject and object. So next, sixth aspect of consciousness, conditioned by the incorrect conceived world of object, there appears six aspects. One is aspect of intellect, second aspect of continuity, the third aspect of attachment, fourth subject of speculation on names and letters, fifth the aspect of going giving rise to karma, sixth, the aspect of anxiety attached to the karma. And these six are indication of the process of discriminating consciousness. Exactly process. Okay? So that process, so that order, the order of these names are very important because it is a process of consciousness. How it works, how consciousness works. First, as the first aspect of intellect, it says, depending on the erroneous conceived world of art, the mind develops the discrimination between liking and disliking. The aspect of intellect. This is not only the intellect or reasoning, okay? But also it is practical, alternative of liking and disliking, But liking and the alternative of liking and disliking doesn't appear after your experience. Okay? But alternative of liking and disliking comes from the capability of your life. In other words, personality and character has already enough capability to create alternative of liking or disliking. But usually liking and disliking appears after, we believe, after experience. Okay? In other words, recognition, after recognition of the object, and then we can create the alternative of liking or disliking. That is a common sense. But in this case, first of all, the human consciousness exactly exists as a whole. Your consciousness exactly exists. But that consciousness, it appears something particular, the Roger's consciousness, Kali's consciousness, sorry. But on the basic of existence, consciousness is all, one, so called Aravijñāna. But when Aravijñāna moves, the Aravijñāna appears individual consciousness, that is discriminating consciousness, so called Rogers and Kali's many consciousness. But at that time, contents of the kind individual, the consciousness, has already the great capacity, capability to make a choice of affective preferences, liking or disliking, before you experience something. That's why first this also bring up this aspect of intellect. So intellect is not merely intellect, it's something more than intellect, their practice. So we accept consciousness as a whole before you evaluate your consciousness. The consciousness exists exactly. Connected with your past, the present, future. That means content or quality of your consciousness. That is called aspect of intellect. So even though you try to destroy your consciousness, it's impossible to destroy because it's there. That is aspect to the intellect. So practically, very naturally, you can automatically. You will have alternative, practical alternative of liking or disliking. Very natural. So, okay. Second, aspect of continuity. Page 45. Second is aspect of continuity by virtue of the intellect, the mind produces an awareness of pleasure and pain in the world of objects. The mind developing thoughts and being bound to them will continue uninterrupted. Okay, the aspect of conditions. The next, there is consciousness at the second step of the process, second process of consciousness, that is continuity. So consciousness is not something you can control. There is already the stream of the consciousness which is always moving. That is aspect, you know, that is continuity there. So consciousness constantly working. So in this case, the clear cognition of object ensues from discrimination of liking and disliking, or an awareness of pleasure and pain. For instance, For instance, we walk in the path in the countryside at night by yourself, and not at night, when you walk in the countryside and you see the something, you see the kind of rope, but you take it for the snake, and immediately you step back, step back first from that rope, regard it as a snake, and then the accurate, going to say, cognition or recognition is taken on it. So before you have accurate cognition, you already have continuity of consciousness. So usually we think when you jump up, we believe, we recognize the rope misunderstood as snake. In other words, we believe that there is accurate cognition. And then we jump up. I don't think it would be reversed. We jump up, and then we can see, oh, it's not snake, it's rope. It means already there is a continuity of consciousness. Or if you walk this like mountain path at night, we feel always fear, even though there can be no clear object around. You cannot see any particular object around. But when you walk along, you feel all fear. Means you don't have accurate conditions because no particular object. But you feel all fear. Means there is continuation of continuity of consciousness before you recognize accurately something as object. That is second. First, there is consciousness as whole, connected with the past, present, future. This is intellect or reasoning. Practically it works. Connected with present world as object. Second, there is a continuity of consciousness. That intellect and the consciousness is moving continuously before you recognize accurately something as object. Wherever you may go, consciousness is gone. That's why you feel fear, or you feel good, you feel greater. So it doesn't mean that process of cognition gives rise to alternative after the accurate recognition on an object, but that situation of subject it gets ready to accept the object at all on convenience prior to cognition. Okay. So prior to cognition, the state of your life as a subject already gets ready to accept object at your own convenience. That is situation. That is the continuity of your consciousness. One more point this continuity of consciousness has is your experiences will carry on in the form of memories. You experience something, and then continuity of consciousness stores your experience as a memory. This is a function of the continuity of consciousness. So under all circumstances, consciousness is working constantly and stores your experience as memories, in the form of memories. Third is aspect of because of the continuity of consciousness, the mind superimposing its deluded thoughts on the world of objects and holding fast to develops attachment to. So next, the aspect of attachment is accurate cognition. You experience accurate cognitions, okay? After jumping up, and then you can have accurate cognition on your object. And then next, you can attach to it. So go, this is a rock. And then, if it is rock, you don't create any suffering. So you can live it. You pass by. But when you see the snake, actually, you don't feel good, so you jump out. Or you feel fear. So that's why, through the word says super imposing on an object, how can I say the super? Through the superimposing or retention of object, or through the recollection of the object. In other words, you can have accurate recognition on object. And the succession of your consciousness, okay? There arises the desire of attachment. So very naturally, it's the next step. You can create attachment. That is third. The fourth aspect of speculation are names and letters. That means to give definition to all things which we have recognized erroneously. So, using the names, using the ideas, concepts, then you can give definition to your object. Or this, the aspect of speculation on names or letter means to understand and judge the object. And then there are sensations of greed, anger, arrogance, doubt, ignorance, and wrong views involved with thinking and judgment. thinking and judgment basically very simple functions. But our judgment and thinking are a little bit complicated because judgment and thinking operate in the human society, surrounded by pros and cons, success and failure, etc. So thinking and judgment is not operate in a simple way. So our thinking and judgment always are going with, or say, the greed, anger, arrogance, doubt. That means we don't believe exactly the our life continued from past, present, future. Or law of causation, we don't believe exactly. We always, because we are always interested in present life. So that is a doubt. So many things. Greed, anger, ignorance, doubt, and arrogance, and wrong views, because you're attached to your object. So that's why it means that all things are considered or understood or judged in relation with those deluded thoughts, so definitions and the objects do not fit each other. So even though you use certain concept in order to understand so-called this table, this is a table, this is ideas, you know, using the concept, and then we say this is the table. And then we understand this desk, this, we understand this. But strictly speaking, there are many different kinds of a desk in size, in length. So no same pattern of the desk. Even though you create two same desk, but strictly speaking, they are different. So we give a definition to these variety of a desk by using a given idea or concept. And then we call desk. But that desk doesn't fit exactly to this, because concept is very general. When we get use of that concept through what you can understand, but actually that concept doesn't fit exactly to this desk which exists from moment to moment. No. So that's why definitions and some object doesn't fit. So very naturally, through the idea you understand the desk, but idea, names and letters, nothing but provisional beings. Temporary we can use, you know, ideas and names and letters. Then we understand it. Object, but idea concept doesn't fit exactly because so many kinds, different kinds of beings, yes, exist. So the consciousness never understand desk which exists right now, right here, exactly now, because we understand desk through the concept, words, better. So that's why we say we understand the desk through consciousness. But that desk the desk, what you have understood through the desk, is nothing but provisional beings. Because your understanding doesn't fit to the desk which exists from moment to moment itself. So that is perverted view, perverted understanding. But we get used of understanding object and subject through the words exactly. So communication of human beings is what? You can have a communication with concept, words, letters. That's it. That is communication of human society. And then we deliver it. We shake hands. That's why right in the middle of shaking and frightened, we fight. It's a force, and then that's why fifth aspect of giving rise to the karma. Then you can create your own karma. Okay? That is the next problem, step. And then sixth is the aspect of anxiety attached to the karma, means you suffer from the shackles. Because you understand the desk and the people through the words and letters. And have a communication through the words and letters. Then touch it. Believing. Like shackles. Then you suffer from. Because friendliness, you know, other concept, doesn't fit to the Rogers I am looking at. I want to communicate with. But I use concept and words to call kindness. Then I shake hands with him. But it doesn't fit to this actual situation. Then next moment, situation completely different, perverted, the uncommon. That's the shackles. Immediately. So friendliness, what is a real friendliness? We don't know. So that friendliness we believe is very shaky. Very shaky. So that's a provision. Okay. And that's why to suffer from shackle means that you cannot be free from. The subject and object you cannot be free from. So you cannot be free from subject and object. That is called suffering from shackles.